Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 24th February 2022. It's a Thursday class. So we'll be continuing our sharing from this book, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutta, Miao Fa Lien Hua Jing. We are at page 220 of the hard copy. We are at the last of the six parameters. Prajna is wisdom. We will continue with the sharing on that. We have covered the first five. Just relax body and mind and maintain a stable posture. Then we will off the light and you all can have your half an hour of awareness based meditation. There is a blue book that I earlier on sent out. For those who are new, who wants to learn meditation, you have to read through this book first. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, part one. That book was based on one of the Thursday class that I gave long time ago. They transcribed it and it's very useful. All the understanding is there. Because when you join our this Tuesday, Thursday or Sunday class on the Zoom session, we are not conducting new classes for meditation. So you have to learn on your own. Then whatever you're not sure, you can ask. So what is more important is, after you have read through the book, you should have a good idea of what this awareness-based meditation is all about. This awareness-based meditation is different from the meditation that normally people do, because most people approach meditation without understanding. So they just follow all the methods, the technique, or whatever instruction that they receive from maybe reading books or teachers or people who lead them. So all this, if you don't have the understanding, will lead to thought-based meditation, because you use the thought a lot, you verbalize a lot, then you focus, you concentrate, and you try to make yourself peaceful without understanding what is meditation. So meditation needs to be understood. When you understand, then only you can do it. But what is it that is the meditation as taught by the Buddha is very important. According to Lord Buddha, most people cannot meditate because they have a problem. They don't have the spiritual faculties, the five spiritual faculties, Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. And because of that, the mind develop the five mental hindrance. This mental hindrance is a result of lacking this five spiritual faculty. Then your mind will have this mental hindrance which are not conducive for meditation. The word mental hindrance means when they arise, they will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state or inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness to meditate. That's why you cannot do the awareness-based meditation because you lack the spiritual faculties. And these five mental hindrances, they are sensual desire and ill will, sloth and torpor or lethargic mind, then restlessness of mind. When your mind is restless, it's also a mental hindrance because you cannot settle down, you cannot calm down, you have problem, you think a lot. That's why your mind become like holding on to things, worrying about things. You become restless, unsettled. And the last one is doubt. Doubt means you don't have the faith, the confidence. You don't understand what this teaching is all about. You doubt the teacher, you doubt the method and the technique, or you doubt what has been taught to you where you cannot understand. So not understanding, lacking faith, leads to doubt. And sensual desire and ill will are the reality that the mind creates through lack of understanding. When you don't have faith, when you don't have the Dhamma understanding or the wisdom, when you don't have sati, mindfulness, when you don't have samadhi, then this mind can become heedless, lost in thought. You are latches on to whatever you come to experience in life, especially in the midst of living. When you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel something, or when you recall through the thought process, thinking of something, your mind tend to react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, based on your conditioning, your views, your opinion, your belief system. So all these things condition you to have the duality of mind state. If you like the sense experience, you develop sensual desire. If you don't like, you want to push it away. That's why sensual desire, you will, or like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, is the leading cause of mental hindrance. Almost throughout the day, human beings create these first two mental hindrances. When you are so habitual in doing this, means throughout the day, you arise as mental hindrance or sensual desire and you will. And if it become a habit, we call it habitual tendency. So how can you meditate? Because these are mental hindrance. It will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So understanding this is most important before you even start contemplating the meditation. So when you understand this, you ask yourself, okay, without the spiritual faculty, what can I do? The mental hindrance will be there. So let it be there. Don't resist it. Don't fight it. Don't be afraid of it. But other people who don't have this understanding, they know that the mind think a lot, but they don't know it's due to mental hindrance. So what they were taught was, you must not become heedless. You must not allow the thinking to distract you. You must focus. You must concentrate. You must fix the mind. That's why they give you an object of meditation to control the mind, to fix the mind. But they didn't know that these are all skillful means for you to train your mind, to anchor your mind. So what you're supposed to do is to develop awareness or mindfulness. That's why the Buddha introduced anapanasati, is mindfulness of the in and out breath. It's not focusing, not concentrating. Then under the kayanupassana, there are six categories of practices. First is anapanasati, to train your mindfulness. Then after that, to stabilize your mindfulness by anchoring it to the four posture. Now no more anapanasati, but the four posture. Yet throughout the day, you are either in the standing posture, sitting posture, walking, or lying down. So you cannot be aware while you are in this four posture. It's very difficult to develop continuity of mindfulness. That's why after that, the third category of practice is the daily mindfulness. You have to develop what the Buddha calls sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement within the present moment. So to do that, you have to be mindful the way. You have to continue all of the activity in between these four postures. And then only you can be mindful in the midst of life. Stabilize it until it's ever mindful. So this one is to stabilize the daily mindfulness while you are living life. This is a very important cultivation. If you don't do this, your awareness-based meditation cannot stabilize in the midst of life. While you are living your life, it can be working, career, or doing your household thing, or doing things that you have passion for. So whatever you do in life, you need to have heedfulness, mindfulness, stability of it. Then only you are a meditator, a cultivator. The Buddha say, you are heedful. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas you don't train yourself, you don't have this type of mindfulness, the heedless are as if dead. Means you cannot be mindful, you will be heedless throughout the day. Then the other thing is, the Buddha knew it's not easy for one to move directly into the daily mindfulness to develop the four posture, mindfulness of the four posture, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down. Then later on to connect all the activity. So what he introduced is the form of meditation, where you develop awareness-based meditation to stabilize your awareness so that you can become very stable in that understanding of what awareness is. You're supposed to realize your true mind, your silent mind, the awareness nature within. When you can stabilize that, realize that, then your mind will enter sati. When your mind enters sati, everything you do will be in sati. That's why after that, when you come out of it, not only your four posture, every action, every movement, even turning of your arm, blinking of your eye, stretching, bending, looking forward, whatever activity you do, the mindfulness is there, automatic. Your mind, the awareness, and all your bodily movement, that's why kaya nuvasana become like automatic. We call it the specific phenomenal awareness. Then in the form of meditation, when you can silence your mind until there is no thought, that is the training of the mind to be aware. Then when you can stabilize it, your awareness will become very different. Then you will have a lot of sensitivity, a lot of understanding. Then you will know you have two minds. One is the true mind that is completely silent without thought. The other one is the thinking mind, the one that creates sankhara activity, the aggregates of mind. These two are very close. From one, it leads to the other. But the main one is our awareness nature. From there, all things arise. That's why the Buddha said, our mind is a foreign of all things. When mind arises, all things arise. Each year, each year, we sing song. So mind is chief. Mind is a foreign of all things. That's why from that nature, all things arise. Nothing is apart from nature within. Because from there, the true mind, the mundane mind arises. The mundane mind is dependent originating, whereas the true mind is zuru-patok. It's just aware, a nature within. It's not a being. You have to realize all this. Unless you realize all this, you cannot meditate. So the form of meditation is what I want you all to develop. I call it the awareness-based meditation. Because this meditation is to develop awareness and stabilize it, nothing else. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. That's why the four support, especially the first three, is very important. You have read through the blue book. You have listened to the sharing. You will understand all this. So to develop awareness-based meditation, technically, you don't need any method or technique or skillful means or object of meditation. But if you are dependent on it, you need it to anchor your mind, you can use it, no harm. Whether you have the object of meditation or don't have, it's no different. You need to have this understanding that I explained just now. Once you understand, then the object of meditation is to anchor your mind so that you can be mindful of it. Then stay there until it becomes very quiet, very still, until the mind enters deep. Then finally, whatever object of meditation you use, it can be anapanasati or daily mindfulness, or even rising, falling, or even the dynamic hand movement or long po tien, or buddho, or the mayana chanting. No different. You must chant until the awareness and the chanting become one. Means mindfulness is developed. The awareness and the in and out breath has become one. So when this happens, the mind will become very quiet and very still. Then it will develop into the stability that you need to be aware. So when mind enters deep, that is your awareness nature. That is the mind that can be aware of all things. But to do that is not easy. That's why you have to relax into all mind state, body and mind, physical, mental. Relax. Don't try to know. Whatever arises, let it arise. Thought arise, let it arise. You don't give it any more attention. It will cease to be. But when you give rise to attention, or you pay attention to it, you get yourself entangled in it, then you create more thought, more sankharma. That's why don't verbalize. Don't try to think, don't try to do anything, just relax. Then second support, maintain awareness. The third support is be aware for as long as you can, technically 24 hours. Just do this. Then everything will slow down, settle down, and you become completely aware of it. That is the formal meditation's initial training. Then when you come out of it, you will understand. Even when you are inside it, that mind state that you have developed will have the ability to observe through the silent mind and understand everything. The whole of the Buddha Dharma, the teaching. You will come to know who you are, what you are, very clearly. So that is this instruction that I want you all to develop understanding. Okay, we are at the sixth parameter. The sixth parameter is prajna. Prajna. So prajna is a Sanskrit word or a Pali word. And the equivalent is wisdom. So the sixth perfection of the six parameters, the last one is prajna. Now we go to prajna is the most important of all the six perfections. Roughly it means wisdom. In cultivating, one must have wisdom. Without wisdom, there is no way to cultivate. Deluded people may cultivate and try to make progress. but they never get anywhere. Those with wisdom can apply effort in any situation because they have genuine prajna. So this is very true, what Master Shenhua mentioned. Actually, without wisdom, you cannot cultivate. But it's like a chicken and egg story. Right? Before you cultivate, you don't have wisdom. So how do you start? You have to start from somewhere. That's why in the teaching, there are three stages of Dhamma. Yeah. So these three phases or three stages of Dhamma, the Buddha explained it very clearly. Yeah. He said, initially when you start, you need to develop what we call Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the phase one Dhamma, stage one. It is called the learning of the Dhamma or the teaching. So Dhamma is a Pali word. Whatever that is been taught by the Buddha is called the Dhamma. That's why the Dhamma is his teaching. But Dhamma can also mean truth, because what he taught are the truth. And he summarized all his essential teaching into the Four Noble Truths. Because these are truths that are not ordinary truths. These are truths that can make you noble ones. That's why it's called Noble Truth. Noble ones during the time of the Buddha is called enlightened beings. Because these beings that are enlightened, they are very noble in all aspects of life. That's why they are called noble ones. They are very noble in their understanding of life. They understand life very clearly. They have developed the wisdom. Then they also conduct themselves in a very noble way. The way they speak, the way they act, the way they interact, and the way they give rise to their thought process. So the way they conduct themselves in the midst of life and society, they are very noble. That's why they are called noble ones. And they have noble qualities, especially the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path. They have right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action. Then right livelihood. Then after that, the four right effort. Then they have right mindfulness, followed by right samadhi. And all this give rise to the Noble Eightfold Path factor of they call the Noble Eightfold Path. This Noble Eightfold Path is only one path, but it has eight path factors. So when you have the embodiment of all these eight path factors, then you can become enlightened. So wisdom is actually the first path factor. You have right view, right understanding of life and the nature's law that governs life and existence, and that constitutes prajna or wisdom path factor. When you understand clearly all of the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the law of karma, the law of mind, and the law of truth, these three right views. In Pali, the Buddha called it karma niyama. Karma is the karmic thing, karmic law. So niyama is the order of karma. That's why it's called karma niyama. Is you must have right understanding and right view regard to this morality law, law of moral cause and effect, or we call the karmic law. And basically, the Buddha has summarized this law You reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. Whatever you plant, if you plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. So all these are very clearly defined. Then the other thing that he specifically defined very clearly is the fifth daily contemplation. He said all living beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So this is a very fundamental understanding, right view. If we know that we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by, we are what we are because of our karma, means our whole of our life or existence depend 100% on karma. So if you don't take care of karma, you will suffer. You will become miserable. You will be afflicted. Why? Because we are born of it. We inherit everything. That's why we are heir to all karma. Then every moment, we are supported and conditioned by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So this one will give you the right understanding to approach life. If our life depends entirely on karma, where we are born of it, and to it, conditions supported by it, and we are what we are because of it. So we have to take care of karma. If we take care of karma, karma will take care of our life. Because when we are born with a good karma, we will have good life. Yeah. Then we will inherit all of the wholesome merits, blessings, wisdom and understanding. That's why we reap what we sow. When you develop goodness, wholesomeness, you will reap the fruit of goodness and wholesomeness. So you plant the seed of wholesomeness, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. If you plant the seed of evil, you will reap the friction of your evil action, speech, and thought process, means your evil coming. So all this will make the individual or the cultivator very, very careful, become very like determined not to fall into this wrong view. When you do not take karma seriously, when you do not understand the power of karma, then you neglect this law, because you choose to be heedless. You don't want to train your mind, you don't want to develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness, to take care of karma, to avoid all evil, to develop goodness, wholesomeness, merits, blessings. Then you reap what you sow, means you sow all the heedless thinking, the heedless way of living, then you will get yourself entangled. So this part is very important. And when you understand this, you move. That's why starting with this, you already have right view. So this is the beginning of wisdom. Then you start to understand why the Buddha's advice is such. It comes from this right view, law of karma. The Buddha, all Sammasambuddha, when they arrive, they give the same advice. Dhammapada verse 183. Sabbapapasa akaranam kusalesa upasampadan secitta pariyatapanam etang buddhana sasana. So there are three advices within this Dhammapada verse 183. The Buddha say, you have to avoid all evil. Sabbe is all. Pavasa is evil. Akaranam. Why? Because you don't avoid all evil, you will break your karmic natures. Your karmic nature will be affected. You will violate the nature's law of karma and leading to negativity of karmic consequence. So the first right view to avoid evil is very important. And what constitutes evil? The five precepts, you don't take care of them. You don't undertake the training rule to abstain from committing these five things. Then they are the root of all evil. It will cause your karmic negativity. It will condition your life to become miserable. So avoiding all evil is the first advice. So to avoid all evil, the Buddha said, you have to keep the precepts. That's why the five precepts are very fundamental to cultivation. So beginning with this understanding is the beginning of prajna. Then you cultivate these five precepts. Then you contemplate, you reflect. Then you look at your life, you observe. By holding on to the precept, it's a meritorious action. It prevents you from committing evil. It prevents you from having the causes and conditions to get into trouble. Your karmic friction of all the negative action, speech, and thought process will become much less. Yeah, from now onward, when you keep your precept, you do not create anymore. But whatever is from your past, you cannot stop. That is the reality. So you understand this, you try. Then you put to test. In fact, every cultivator, if they are sincere, serious, once you start to cultivate these precepts, commit yourself, undertake the training rule to abstain from evil by observing the precept, your life will change. You will become a better person. You will have more and more positive wipes or energy. You will retain a type of aura that is very different. It's the power of precepts. Precept is a meritorious action. It's a great merit. A being who holds precept can be born as a devas after you pass away. Yeah. Then because you hold your precept, you are very virtuous. You will not do wrong thing. So this first pariyatti is very important. Learning the teaching to cultivate, to move. So the first right view is law of karma. So that one, you develop the training to abstain from committing all those things. And to be skillful in it, to be good at it, you must also train your mind to be mindful, to be aware, to have the spiritual faculty so that you are no longer heedless. So that you can be in the meditative state throughout the day. Yeah. During your waking moments, then later on can go even into your sleep when you are skillful. Then after that, you will have this ability to be aware of your mental intention behind all your actions, speech, and thought process. Then you can develop the four right effort to be aware of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action that has a reason. Then develop the meditative five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, to abandon them. Then after that, with the wisdom developed, after you have straightened your view, you have the yoniso manasakara, then you can prevent it from arising. Means the right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action can be developed. Then after that, the third right effort is right effort to cultivate the virtue, the wholesome action, speech, and thought process that are still not in you. Means the right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Following the cultivation of the third and fourth right effort. So this third right effort is very important. It's the beginning of training the mind to be virtuous, to have right thought, right speech, and right action, to develop wholesomeness of thought process, leading to gentle, pleasant, and wise speeches that leads to harmony, leads to love, compassion, kindness, gentleness, respect, gratitude, generosity, wholesomeness. So all this will happen. Then after that, the way you act, the way you live your life, is all according to the Dhamma way. So you will have right action. You act in a very righteous way. You act in a very wise way. Then to do that, you have to be truthful. You have to be sincere. You have to be respectful. You have to be gentle, pleasant, kind, compassionate, loving. All these are the virtues that will surface. So once you are able to do that, your life will transform. Yeah, this third right effort is very, very powerful. It can transform the individual. Then after that, the fourth right effort is the refinement. The right effort to refine upon and make perfect all the right thought, right speech, right action that you have developed. That is the whole of the cultivation, including the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path Factor, right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort. So this is a very complete Pariyatti understanding. Then from there, you move on to the second stage of cultivation, which the Buddha called Patipatti. Patipatti is after Pariyatti, after you have learned the teaching, after you have understood the teaching, then you put it into practice. You cultivate it. So that phase is most important. It's like anything you do in life. Even if you want to be skillful in cooking things or making things like cake or food or whatever, or anything in life. If you want to make cake, of course you can buy the cookbook or the cake book and all those things. But if you only read the theory and you doesn't try it out, it doesn't make you an expert. You don't know where you stand. And you have a lot of things to learn because you are not experienced enough. You don't have the exposure. So you have to learn from people who has gone through. Then they will recommend you, oh, you go and read this book, you get hold of this book. Then you have to start by trying this. Then you find out everything you try, every time you try, you learn. So when it comes to cultivation, it's the same. Knowing the Dhamma knowledge, the theory, and not able to put it into practice is of no use. It's like the incense that has no fragrance. It doesn't have the potency. So Patipatti, the phase two, is to put this teaching into practice. So where you have to check from where the Buddha teach all this cultivation. That's why under the Dhammapada verses 423, there are 40 verses. I think verse 21 to verse 40. Oh, sorry, 20 verses. They are called Appamada Vaga, the verse on mindfulness. Mindfulness. So if you were to go through this, you will know how to cultivate. The Buddha starts by telling the monks, Dhammapada verse 21. He said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you don't train your mind, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Then under Dhammapada verse 22 that follow, He said, the wise one who understands this will intend on heedfulness. And because they intend on heedfulness, they will get to rejoice in the realm of the Aryans or the enlightened ones, which means they are destined for enlightenment. Then Dhammapada verse 23 confirm all this. Yeah. The Buddha said, the ever mindful, the constantly meditative and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. Means, if you are constantly meditative, ever mindful and constantly meditative, you will realize the supreme enlightenment of Nibbana. It's guaranteed. So this is what heedfulness is all about. You can train your mind to be ever mindful, then use it to meditate, constantly meditative. That's why all cultivation start with this, mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. So to be ever mindful, you have to train your mind to be mindful first. That's why we develop awareness-based meditation. Then after you have stabilized it, you use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is basically the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Where this Noble Eightfold Path is being clearly expounded under the fourth Noble Truth, the Buddha said, there is this Noble Eightfold Path under the fourth Noble Truth. You cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So you meditate for what? To become enlightened, isn't it? To be free from all suffering, isn't it? That's why you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is a meditation as taught by the Buddha, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Because meditation is not about sitting and closing your eyes or focusing, concentrating, developing psychic energy and all those things, or create fantasy or beautiful mind state, develop the blissful, calm and very peaceful, fantastic mind state. That itself is not meditation. Maybe the byproduct of meditation can give you some of this, but a lot of this lead you astray. So the real meditation is you have to train your mind to be aware, stabilize it, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. That is the real one. So all this are very important understanding. Then after the phase two Dhamma, Patipatti, the third phase is called Pativeda. The Buddha said that the phase of Dhamma, you get to reap the fruit of your hard work, your diligence, when you have faith, when you have Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, the five spiritual faculty that drives you to cultivate until they become balanced, very stable, unshakable. Then you will become enlightened. Once you become enlightened, you get to live the life of an enlightened being. That's why the third phase of Dhamma is the most beautiful part of your life. You can develop that. My nature rejoices and sadhu. So this is what you need to know. So Pariyati leading to Patipatti, then Patipatti leading to Pativeda. So this part, Master Shen Hua didn't explain. I hope it will help you. He just gave a very brief description of what Prajna is. Then we read on, then you will see the big difference. Then he gave a poetic description. He said, from green bamboo to yellow flower, everything is Prajna. So this one you can understand is true. We are all of life. Truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. And what is truth? Truth are the nature's law that can explain the way things are. That's why in the midst of life and existence, truth is everywhere. In the midst of life and existence, you have the Dhamma, you have the mindfulness and the awareness, you can see them unfolding. That's why prajna is everywhere. So he used a poetic description. He said, from green bamboo to yellow flower, everything is prajna. Of course, you understand. But it can be applied to all things, not necessarily the green bamboo and the yellow flower. No. All of life, all of phenomena, whether it's physical phenomena, mental phenomena, or nature's phenomena, the phenomenal world of consciousness and form, they exhibit the nature's law clearly, especially the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta, impermanent, suffering state, non-self nature, empty nature, existent, anatta nature. So all these are there. It's whether you can understand or not. That's why I said a lot of these things that is being discussed are not explained. Okay. I read on. Everything is a manifestation of wisdom. For example, one of my disciples told me, this is Chenhua, that another one had said, every time the disciple who told me this, talked to me, he scolded me or he scolds me. Who is he scolding? Isn't that deluded? If you were intelligent, how could you be received? How could you receive a scolding? Even if you was, he was scolding you, if you had wisdom, you wouldn't accept his scolding and it would revert back to him. The Sutra of 42 sections say that someone once scolded the Buddha, but the Buddha made no reply. The Buddha said, you insult me, but I didn't respond. And so the insult reverts to you. It is like trying to spit in the sky and the spit will fall back onto your own face. So this is a Chinese or Mandarin proverb, I think. So even if he doesn't scold you, even if he does scold you, if you don't react, it's just as if he had it. If he scolds you, pretend he is singing you a song. Or that you don't understand him because he is speaking Japanese or Chinese or French. If you can't understand him, then there is no problem, whatever. This is genuine wisdom. This one, according to Xuanhua, you all please don't follow this. Then there is no problem, whatever. This is genuine wisdom. This one, according to Xuanhua. If you do understand him and think he's coding me, well, then ultimately, who are you? This part is not bad. Bodhisattva does not have the mark of herself, of others, and living beings, or Dhamma, or lifespans. So how can they hold on to an egoic mind, which is the I and the me? Those who have left the home life, especially, must take their self, the ego, and throw them into the ocean. Here he mentioned Pacific Ocean. Yes, America is near Pacific Ocean. Get rid of them. Have no self. And then everything will be okay. It's not to say have no self. You must have the wisdom to understand that the form and mind, this one is not you. This one is anatta. Empty nature. That's why we call it non-self. Non-self doesn't mean there is nothing inside that. No. There is a human being. There is a form and mind. But it's not you. It doesn't belong to you. Why? It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. This one is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. That's why you can see. That's why in the teaching, the Buddha mention it. But people cannot understand. People thought he contradicted himself. He said the Buddha teach the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta, non-self. Of course, the empty nature, they don't understand. They always interpret anatta as non-self. Then the Buddha, on the fifth daily contemplation, mentioned, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma condition, and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So, do you think the Buddha contradicts himself? Or the Buddha don't have to understand it? No, he's referring to the form and mind. The form and mind has an entity. But this is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it's subject to change. It's impermanent. There is the conventional truth of a self, a atta, for the form and mind. That's why the form and mind is subject to karma. It recognizes relationship and all those things. Like duality and the mark belong to the conditioned world. So the Dhamma is so profound where people cannot understand. So it's not about, like most people think, throw the self away, abandon the self, that you will have non-self or no self. It's not like that. Non-self here means not to be deluded by the form of mind, thinking that it's you, thinking that this one belongs to you, because this one goes the way of nature. When the condition ceases to be, when consciousness is separate from the form, then they say you die. How can you die? If it can die, I mean, it's not you. Understand? No. So all this understanding is lacking, not there. That's why they can't penetrate. So anyway, here is what Xuanhua used to describe. Huh? So we just make sure you understand. Huh? Mm. Then he goes on. The other part is better. Huh? He said, now we will discuss the three phases of thought. Here in the commentary, he didn't explain it so completely. What I explained earlier on to you all on is better. Huh? This is about the three period of time, the three period of thought process. So in Mahayana, they call 过去心不可得, means the mind that has passed cannot be obtained. Then 现在心, means the present mind, also cannot be obtained. Then there is also this future mind. 未来心也不可得, means these three periods of time, they are not what you think. Because the past is already gone. No more reality. 不可得 means no more reality, gone. Future, yet to come, also no more reality. Then the present moment is the only reality in life, the highest in life, within life. But why did the Mayana say the present moment also, you cannot have it? 不可得. The meaning is because this present moment, which is the only reality in life or the highest in life, is not what you think. Because split second is day and gone. It arises and passes away very fast. That's why this one, unless you are mindful and aware, you cannot see. So in order to transcend life, you must transcend even the present moment. Yet the present moment is still within the field of thought. You must cease your thought to realize the unconditioned Nibbana, to liberate your mind, to free your mind. from birth and death. That's why to transcend life, being 了生死 in Mahayana term or Mandarin term, 现在心也不可得. Then the other wider spectrum is when we talk about life, we relate to existence, isn't it? To have life, we have to go through existence, isn't it? True or not? It's related. If you don't exist, how can you have life? So life is related to existence. And existence is time-based. So the whole spectrum of time or existence can be divided into past, present, and future. That's why there are three periods. And we already define them. They are all not what you think. The only reality is that moment. And split second is day and gone. How real can it be? Moment to moment, life passes by. And they are just like a lightning flash, gone. What are you doing? Ask yourself that question. Inquire into that. Then you will awaken. Most human beings, even yourself, unless you have trained and developed the mindfulness, the awareness, and the understanding, you can never leave the moment. You can never be with the moment. You can never live life moment to moment. Most people are lost in thought, heedlessly thinking, lost in thought. They are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so, they never live life. They are never aware, hardly aware. Yeah. So this part, Xuanhua didn't explain. Eh? So I explained to you. Now I will read through so that you can develop some form of understanding. Mm. Bodhisattva swept away the three phases of thought, means the three periods of time, eh? And now the four mark. They sweep away the three phases of thought as one would sweep the dust up off the floor. There are three phases of thought, actually the three periods of time. They are the past thought, the present thought, and the future thought. What is past thought? It is thought that has already gone. That's why I say there is no reality. Having already gone by, it's in the past. That's why 过去心不可得. Then the present moment thought, you may say this is the present moment. But just as you say, it's already past. And it has become the past. The present does not stand still and the past has already gone by. The present does not stay. If you say this is the present, it's already gone by. It turned into the past. So present thought can never be obtained. Means all the three period of thought cannot be obtained. Or there is no reality. And what about future thought? Future thought. Future has yet to arrive. Since it hasn't arrived, where are you going to find it? So it is said, past thought cannot be obtained, 过去心不可得. Present thought cannot be obtained, 现在心不可得. And future thought, 未来心, also cannot be obtained, 也不可得. If these three, the past, present, and the future phases of thought are entirely unobtainable, what is there for you to attach to? This is wise. Huh? There is nothing to be attached to. When there is no attachment, that is the attainment of liberation. The attainment of liberation is actually wisdom. That is genuine wisdom leading to freedom. So this part is okay. This part is quite good. Eh? Mm. Bodhisattva also cultivate the four methods of conversion. Giving, dana, to kind word, kind, gentle, and pleasant. Wise words, then helpfulness, loving, compassionate, caring. Then last one is similar occupation. This one is the Bodhisattva's way. Bodhisattva should be resolved to give, to make gift of wealth, Dhamma, and fearlessness to all living beings. Means Dana Parami, as discussed earlier. Then kind words, actually kind alone not enough, but gentle, pleasant, wise, and kind speeches. Bodhisattva must practice kind, gentle, pleasant, and wise speeches. But only Bodhisattva can do this. Those who are not Bodhisattva cannot. Bodhisattva use kind, caring words that spring from compassionate concern they hold for all living beings. How did they become compassionate? Bodhisattva, they become compassionate because Bodhisattva had no mark of a self. They see all living things as identical with themselves. Not only do they see all living things as identical with themselves, they see themselves as identical with all living beings. Not only identical, but as a unity. They make no distinction between him and me. So they like to rescue living beings because it is the same as rescuing themselves. They do so by means of compassionate and kind words to all living beings. Then helpfulness. All living beings like to receive benefits. You should benefit them, help them out in their affair. There are many ways to help others, but in general, Bodhisattva do this that cause others to obtain advantages, means to be helpful, to be a blessing to all. Yeah. You must have this caring nature, ever ready to give, to advise, to counsel, to protect and to help. Then last one is similar occupation. Bodhisattva can transform themselves into thousands or millions of bodies. When they see a living being, they determine which kind of body they will need to assume to save that being. Then they transform to that kind of body to teach it. For example, when Shakyamuni was practicing the Bodhisattva way or cultivating the Bodhisattva way, he turned into a deer in order to teach and transform the deer. Practicing the Bodhisattva way, you must practice what is hard to practice. If it's basically difficult, you have to do it. That's the way of the Bodhisattva. You must give up what is hard to give up. If it's hard to renounce, you must renounce it. The harder something is to give up, your riches, for example, the more genuine and renounce, the more genuine the renunciation becomes. You must bear what is difficult to bear. Things that are difficult to endure must be endured. This is the duty of one who practices the Bodhisattva way. What is hard to you, you must heal. If it is difficult to you in a given situation, you must be able to do it so. I often say, you must eat what others cannot eat and bear what others cannot bear. So here is the example given by Xuan Hua. This is not to say eating what others cannot eat means that we rush in to eat all the good food before anyone else get a chance to have any. It doesn't mean that one eats the most delectable delicacies in the world, those that others have never tasted. It means that one eats those things that others do not like to eat. Bodhisattva can eat such things. I will tell you something. I'm not a Bodhisattva, but I can eat the thing which others do not like to eat. When I was 17 years old in Manchuria, there was a virtuous society which exclusively taught the way virtue, humaneness and righteousness. I joined the society when I was 16. When I was 17, I became the head instructor of about 60 or 70 people. I was very young. And the students were men and women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. The society advocated thrift and economy to the point that we even ate our own potato skin. People would usually throw the skin away, but in the virtual society, we talk about morality and eating what others do not like to eat. So I said to the student, When everyone eats their potato, they shouldn't spit the skin out, force them down. This will show that we actually do eat what others cannot eat. I say it and I eat my own potato skin, but the student, for the most part, let my words blow past their ear like the wind and spit the skin on the table or on the floor. When we eat, no one was allowed to talk. I had always told them not to spit out the skin, so I didn't pay any attention to what they did. After lunch, I went around the table with a bowl, picked up all the potato skin that the student had spit out on the table and on the floor, and I stood in front of them and ate them. The student were agog and were very embarrassed. From that time onward, not a single student dared to spit out his potato skin. They never spit them out again. If I hadn't actually practiced what I preach with my own example, I could not have influenced the student to change. They spit the skin out of their mouth and put the skin in my mouth. And I put the skin in my mouth and I ate them. They were greatly ashamed. This is called eating what others cannot eat and bearing what others cannot bear. So this is Master Shen was very good personal example. Huh? Bearing what others cannot bear. What is it that people cannot bear? Okay, I think we stop here because it's getting late now. So now we open up for meditation, reporting, and question and answer session.
I noticed that the last few sections there's a lot of dharma, interesting dharma insight. Mm. And like today, like you mentioned about the beginning part, the three phases of
dharma.
Mm. Yeah. So I think a lot of this dharma, sometimes you know you have to listen again and again, mm. Because it's too much, is it? too much to absorb. So like what I did was like when I did the mini YouTube for the last two sessions, there's one part you mentioned a lot of sufferings actually was triggered by fear. Suddenly it just struck me. Because I think we all, especially like me, like you know, contains a lot of like fears and unknown and all these things. So if you just listen from the lesson, is it, sometimes you may miss out, is it? So when I listen again to that part, it suddenly just trigger me that, you know.
So very good.
So I thought it's like, you know, a lot of this kind of like dharma, you actually need to quietly listen again and again, you see. So now like I can understand further why, you know, that fear is so detrimental, you see. You know, and how we should be able to encounter our fear, to look into that, because that is the source.
The root cause of suffering.
Correct.
Their fear is the ultimate evil roots that surface from delusion. When you don't have the understanding that fear is always behind, like Jin Hao just now mentioned, fear of what? Fear of the unknown. You don't know what the future is going to be like. Then sometimes fear, because you have certain type of first noble truth reality situation that afflicts you, haunted you. So this fear can be very intense. Sometimes it's shocking. Sometimes you become like so affected, you cannot believe that it can happen that way. So sometimes you have disease, sickness, you fear of dying. Fear of the cause to actually get yourself healed or see doctors and all this thing. Then, especially if it's a traumatic disease like cancer or what, there is fear of death. You may die and it doesn't really take so long. Certain type of cancer can be within weeks or months gone. Sometimes the doctors say you had 3 months, 6 months. then stroke, fear that you cannot do anything, you become a vegetable, dependent, then fear of losing your job, fear of losing your loved ones. So all this behind is fear, fear of separation, fear of making mistakes, like you break the law, then you scare the police, the MACC, or the authority in charge, like you break the law, drugs and all those things, or commit white collar crime, CBT. When the law comes after you, there is intense fear. When you are called in for interrogation, that type of fear is difficult to comprehend unless you are in it. So fear is actually the main thing behind all suffering. Whatever First Noble Truth reality, finally you can relate back to fear. It's just like old age, sickness and death, even birth. Fear of being born into this world because you don't know how to survive. You need support when you are young and you are born. That's why you need parents. But some are born without parents, depending on the situation. And it can be very traumatic. Then as you go to old age, there is a lot of fear because you have seen how people cannot go in old age, especially old people. Their senses are failing them and they keep on having problems. And the problem become more intense and more severe is because as you age, you tend to become less and less useful to society. So even if you have a good career or working in a very nice position, private sector or government sector or what, but when you reach certain age, people doesn't want you really. So what happens is, after you retire, your source of income, which is mainly salary, if you are not somebody with inheritance and know how to invest to grow your money, then what happens is, when you reach old age, now it's about 60, you are forced to retire, like many people, even Kayamitas. But so far so good, most Kayamita, they know how to survive, they have saving, they have EPF and other things, so this one do help. But not everybody is so fortunate. There are a lot who just manage to survive, not much saving, even their EPF doesn't last that long. So what happens is as you age, that disease, sickness starts to haunt you. Your senses start to fail you, your organs start to fail you. And nowadays, medical fees is not cheap. The cost of consultation of specialists is not cheap. So a lot of things need money. Even insurance need to pay premium. And the older you are, the premium is more expensive, higher. So all this trigger a tremendous fear. Then some, when they are old or elderly, sick, if they fall or have an accident, bedridden, how? Nobody to take care, that fear will intensify. So many of such things that we never really thought of when we are young. When you go through life, as you approach your 50s, 60s, 70s, you will experience all this and you will go through all this phase. But those who have that Dhamma, so far so good, I think they are blessed. We don't have problem or situation, but not everybody is so fortunate, like I said. So you look at the First four reality, birth, old age, sickness, we covered. Death is also very traumatic. That fear of death, where you don't know what happened after death. Most people don't understand. They don't have mindfulness. They don't have awareness. They don't know what the form of mind is all about. They got a lot of superstition. Then the thought will project, ayo, they say Thai already go to hell, how are or if I don't embrace that religion, I may not go to heaven. So that delusion, that fear, then when you approach death, it's really traumatic, it's not easy. Sometimes this old age sickness and death thing can come together as one package. So it can be really, really traumatic and very difficult to comprehend, endure, and go through. Then the other one is separation. Wow, that one, most people hit separation from married one or loved one or your prized possession, your wealth, your property, your career, everything that you hold on dearly gets separated from you because of nature's disaster or unforeseen circumstances. So many of these can happen. And it's quite common. Sometimes because of COVID pandemic, suddenly, you see now the young kids are affected. Then just now I was told by my brother, there was my hometown friend, younger than my elder brother by a few years, but older than me a few years. We used to go to the father shop to patronize them and buy their fried kway teow, their fish porridge and all those things. It's a very famous shop. So what happened was after the father passed away, the eldest son took over. And I was told recently, not too long ago, about 1 year ago, he only got two sons. Both the sons succumbed to COVID-19 and died. Until he gave up the whole business, he got no mood to continue. He just gave it up, the business. And finally, I think they ran the shop out. It was so traumatic. And we have seen how people suffer, those who are in the fourth and fifth stage of COVID-19. Especially during the early stages of the pandemic, before the what they call vaccination, all those things are available or come about. There are so many stories of people going to hospital with not enough support and service. Not enough paid, and people were left to suffer and die. So when you recall all those things, or you even witness it on the WhatsApp or the internet, it's not easy to endure unless you have the Dhamma and the understanding. So this can be very traumatic. Then the number six one is when you are with people whom you don't like. That one also can hit you very, very badly. Because there are a lot of such situations in this world. You look at now today, Ukraine, there, war again. Russia, the US also in war. Europe, NATO also in war. The European Union. And the whole world now is topsy-turvy because of the war and Putin launched the attack. The whole world market went into a tailspin, and all the commodity price become topsy-turvy. Oil price shoot through the roof, hit 100 US again. Gas price also shoot through the roof. Then I was told palm oil also follow 7,000 per ton hit. It was at first 5,000 something, 6,000, 6,000 something, now 7,000. So a lot of these things can affect the man on the street in the world. And all these are realities of life and existence. It's not for you to say and complain, "Ayo, how come these people so cruel, so chanyan and all?" It's nothing to do with that. You have the Dhamma, you understand. These are realities of life and existence. Like my brother told me. Yeah. Yeah, my brother, elder brother is 6 years older than me. He's 74 now. He said, luckily during our time, during the first 70 years of his life, when he was young, doing business or something, he said that time, luckily no such thing as pandemic and all those things, you know, COVID-19. He said, otherwise, diamond, he said, that time, he just know how to buy things, then got installment and all the thing, then the business, as usual, can cover. But if got anything out of the normal, like pandemic or what, gone already, especially this round, two year plus, he said, it's crazy, isn't it? How can you plan? You cannot plan. So it's not easy to endure all these things. So a lot of people have intense fear. In fact, a lot of people who consulted me, I can feel their suffering, their fear. There are many who actually cannot cope with life. So any of the First Noble Truth reality can hit them very, very badly. Some even want to commit suicide, suicidal thought and all those things. Then some develop psychiatric problem and all those things. So there are a lot of affliction all around the world. Human beings suffer, really suffer. And sometimes through society's abuse, like in the States, the anti-Asian sentiment, they really whack you. they really bully you. And I was even told, I saw my classmates who stay in certain part of US, Europe, and other part of the world. They say certain street you cannot go on, Asian. Even Australia, they told me. He said, you go to the area, the pub and all those, you better avoid, otherwise you cannot work for nothing, not knowing the reason. So take care of karma, be heedful. Then you have to understand these are reality of life and existence. You have to confront. Then when you are people whom you don't like some, the mother-in-law, the father-in-law, and there are also bullies around. Then you borrow money from loan shark, worse. Nowadays, a lot of story. Then even you in the working environment, some of the bosses are not so understanding or reasonable. They harass you. they really put fear in you. So management by fear and harassment can create hell. So a lot of people got a lot of fear when they go through their career life, because they cannot take the stress. Fear of losing the job, fear of scolding, fear of reprimand, being reprimanded by bosses and all those things. So the fear is so intense. Sometimes they cannot deliver the job, the work. So they got so much fear. And sometimes they make a mistake, they committed certain mistake or CBT, or make a wrong decision or what, and because of their carelessness, they cause so much losses to the company. And this one can bring for great consequences. And they can report to police and send you to jail. And a lot of these things trigger intense fear. So fear is very real, and a lot of people have gone through life, they also experience fear in various ways, especially those who have problems when they came and see me, consult me. I told them, take care of karma, then develop the understanding of the Dhamma, then resolve issue amicably and move on. That is the way to resolve it, not to go and worry about it. Because no amount of fear, worry, anxiety can help you to solve your problem. Can't. You have to pick up your faith, your courage. You have to be strong. You have to move forward. That is what life is all about. So you look at the eight realities of life existence under the First Noble Truth. They are so severe and intense. We only talk about number six. Number seven, when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when you cannot like get hold of what you expect to get, expectation in life are not met. Sometimes can be very, very traumatic, very intense. It will affect the individual. They become very unhappy, depressed, sad. So sorrow and lamentation leading to severe, what they call psychiatric problem, or what they call depression, depressive emotion and mood. Then the fear is so intense, they create panic attack, phobia. They cannot sleep, insomnia. And the panic attack can be very severe until they really, the fear is so intense, that's why it will attack them. And they like loss of breath, can die. And this is very common, I tell you. You may not realize it. But you don't take care of karma, you will see and experience them. But for me, because although I don't experience them, but I see people coming to me, reporting to me, sharing all this. That's why it's not easy for living beings. This teaching is very useful, appropriate. Then, apart from the earlier thing that we mentioned about old age, the problem of dementia is also very intense. So this dementia thing, really, even my elder brother, he saw a lot of older people going through. One of them is his mother-in-law. He also get prepared. He went buy those medicine, which are very not cheap, I should say, to actually take care. He don't want to end up like that. Because when you reach certain age, it can be very intense, very, very traumatic. Like we know of one person, the husband and wife 80 plus, one couple 80 plus, the husband almost 90 years old already. Then the children are overseas. One of them is a doctor, one of them is a quite a successful science student, I think. Then the couple live alone, and they were so old. The husband got dementia. The last few years, the wife already can't even really take care of herself or cope, have to take care of the husband some more. And every time the husband would tell her funny thing, he cannot remember that he sold his car. And he cannot remember a lot of things, and he keep on asking the wife, and he keep on wanting to go out to go and look for it. Then when he went out, he don't know how to go home, and have to phone up, get people to search for him and all those things. So a lot of things you haven't seen, witnessed or heard of, you may think maybe it hasn't happened to you, you don't know. But these are realities of life and existence. That's why when you understand the Dhamma, you will understand why all these are possible. And they are not rare. Almost everywhere. The only thing is less reported. Unless you are in this field helping people going through all this, you seldom hear or see. Maybe once a while you read it in the social media, in the papers, the press, and all things. Apart from that, none. So these are realities. Then the eight final summary, attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind, the grasping aggregate. That one is very traumatic. When you attach to your feeling, your emotion, your wrong view, your so-called memory of the past, scars of memory, your suffering, your misery, your phobia, all this can be very, very traumatic. So attachment, sometimes the mind can become so intensely full of fear, worry, anxiety. It leads to insomnia. You cannot sleep because that thing is bothering you. To you, it's like this problem you cannot handle. Then the suicidal thought will come on this. This final summary, the Upadana Khandas, in short, the attachment to the five aggregates of grasping is the cause of suffering, is very true. Very, very true. Not until you have that mind to understand, you won't understand. Because after my understanding came the sensitivity, all the, then I knew how people grasp at all these things. How they cling on to their scars of memory, their phobia, their insecurity, their fear, their worry, their anxiety, their sorrow, their lamentation. They cannot, like, you use the word let go, it's actually a wrong word. It's no point how to let go. Without wisdom, you cannot let go. You need the understanding. They lack the understanding, that's why they hold. And they cling on to it like a red hot thing. That's why I give you all the example, the molten red hot iron ball. You go and hold it like this cup. Let's say filled with boiling water, hot water. You hold it, it will burn you and torment you. What is the natural thing to do? Don't hold, put it down. Put it down, at least it's not burning you and tormenting you. So this is a good example. Then tell yourself, what happened? How can I resolve it amicably? Of course, you can wait for it to cool down. The other way is get a glove or a cloth to hold it, whether it's too hot or too cold. But these are a small problem, etc. That one, the typical first noble true reality one, is a major problem. You're a living being, you tell them, don't worry lah. Just forget about it lah, let go. You know what they tell you? He said, because it's not happening to you, that's why you can say no need to come out with capital. Men pun, because it's not you, you say. If it's you, you see whether you can do it. So all these things they will tell you. But the reality is, if you know how to explain to them, they will understand. Then I say, okay, fair enough. That is your so-called problem, dilemma, issue, or whatever. You cannot resolve, okay? So by doing what you are doing now, holding on to it and worrying about it, will it help you? It's just like you hold on to all this, burning you, tormenting you. You are suffering, unending. I'm not telling you not to do anything. I'm telling you to accept this reality, because this is a reality. Accept. Then put it down. Then ask yourself, what happened? How can I resolve this amicably? So that I can move, I can give back my good life. But this is the way to solve. And you apply Dhamma, Noble Eightfold Path. You don't go and deludedly worry about it, hold on to it and becoming miserable. No point. So when you do not have fear over it anymore, when you can accept this reality, even though you haven't resolved it, don't worry. At least now it's not burning you, not tormenting you. You are now at peace. Then you ask yourself, what happened actually? How come this thought trigger of fear project and create so much suffering until I cannot sleep, until I have so much fear problems? When you reflect and contemplate, when you know how to meditate and calm yourself down, then you realize this is just a reality. Reality means what? You have to resolve it. Resolve it means what? That a lot of people with financial problem or whatever problem, the worst case is it's not a crime. It's not a criminal crime in the sense that you don't have to go to jail. Because if you say you want to pay, you cannot afford, the worst thing they can do is to put you on bankruptcy. That's it. That is the worst case scenario. So why do you worry so much? A lot of people really worry. Then what happened is the bank is very kind. Once they know that, then if you're willing to talk to them and tell the bank, you're already right off, isn't it? What if we negotiate? I pay you 20% or 30%. They will take, I tell you, waive all their interest, then resolve. At least they recover. I have seen people, I have got one Dhamma friend who helped the niece, the cousin there, to clear their credit card problem, their loan, their property loan problem. It's because it can be done. It called up the bank and said, I'm willing to help my niece, my cousin. But they need the bank to help, to cooperate. That's how they do it. And it can be done. Then if it's really a certain type of like marriage, separation or whatever, or disease or what, that one you need Dhamma, you need understanding to actually resolve it. So that one you have to understand the wisdom part, the prajna part. So this is what I think cultivator or Dhamma friends will need as advice to move on, to resolve whatever suffering that humanity has, so that you can apply it for your own need if you were to go through, or to help others. It can be your loved ones, your siblings, or your friends, or even your neighbor, or whatever. So this today's topic discussion, as brought out by Jin Hao, is very good. If you trace back all of suffering, the source behind is always fear. You will finally end up fear. Because of that fear, trigger of worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, panic attack, everything follow. These are what we call deluded wrong thought. What are wrong thought? Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. That condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your intense phobia and all those things. Sometimes your insecurity or your unhappiness, your sorrow, your lamentation. So all this is what Dhamma is. When you understand, then you can resolve it. You can stand above it. You can liberate your mind and free. Most important thing is to penetrate the universal characteristic. He no you, he no me. No mark of self, no mark of others. No mark of life, existence, Dhamma. Yes, that pertains to the conditioned world. So when all this has been understood, then it's easy. The form and mind is just karmically conditional for us to come to this existential world, to live life, to exist through life, to cultivate, to develop all this understanding and wholesomeness. It's not you. So make use of it. Do not worry about it. Do not attach, cling and hold and develop all the unnecessary suffering and misery. See it clearly with mindfulness, with awareness. Then contemplate, reflect, develop the understanding, the awakening, then all this is no more an issue, no more a problem. Okay? Hopefully this will help. Anything else, you know, you want
to add? Yeah, release, release, Sadhu. And the fear is so real, especially nowadays where, you know, you can get all the information from the social medias, the pandemic and these things. And even though it may not happen to you, but, you know, you can sense that, you know, from other people's story and all this, you see. So what I noticed is that along this way, if you don't have the cultivations or understandings, it is very, very difficult, you see. So like what you mentioned the last lesson, say that one of the dana, which is like the fearless support, you see. So again, you have to count your own good karma, whether along the way you have the, what do you call that, guayan, you know, the good people, you know, to provide you the fearless support, you see. So if not, really, is it, if and if not, it's not easy, is it? So, you know, I think while we finger crossed that things haven't happened to us, we have to prepare ourselves to, you know, to do cultivation diligently, take care of our karma, and then provide, you know, support to others where whatever things that we can, is it, just in time when, you know, if things happen to you, you know, they will have the same things, you know, support, you see. So really, Sadhu, brother Teo, really.
So Sadhu, to Jin Hao, for bringing out the good karma. The other thing that I want to add is, the recent flood in Klang, Taman Sri Muda, and also the pandemic, I think we can see how those who have the Dhamma can understand, can go through. Then as Kayamita, we also help out. That's why we set up the flood relief fund. Then we did our part. Although our Kayamita that are affected are a few, I think less than five, according to Suyan. So we help them all. So all these are very wholesome. Then we share information about COVID-19, the pandemic and all those things. Then Suyan set up a lot of WhatsApp groups. They are very useful, very helpful. Can update people, can give people understanding. That's why they were very grateful towards what Suyan has done. And many other Kayamitas too. They are very helpful in that sense. So whenever you have problem, do not be shy. Just call up those Kayamita that has the contact. They can help. Like Sister Pamasuri, just the cousin they all, the Ping An Medical Shop. They have this consultation and they have the skill to advise and the medication to deliver now by courier service, by online service. No need to like go to the shop, meet up physically, no need. Now it can be sent. My brother, that they sent me some, I think it's like a type of multivitamin. He said very good. You saw on the TV advertisement on the McCormick or what, I don't know, or three boxes, I think. He just sent one day from Alastair, it reached my house the next day. Now it's so efficient, the logistics. The delivery. Last time you had to wait for postman, and you cannot track. This one you can track. They can even text you coming in an hour's time or whatever. So all this because of technology. So we should rejoice in all this wholesomeness of what Kayamita can do to help out during crisis. In fact, the recent flood also not easy for those who are affected to endure, especially those who are living in Taman Sri Muda. Klang, I think, not so bad, but also a bit of flood here and there. But Sri Muda reached the first floor, 10 feet. That one was pretty bad, not easy. Okay, very good. So I think with this we can end.